The pandemic has thrown SEPTA into a budget crisis. Ridership and revenue are both way down. The agency is considering service cuts, and it recently said it can't afford to pay death benefits for workers who died from the virus. But that didn't stop the agency from spending an unusually large amount of money on overtime.
In the fiscal year that ended in June, you saw $59 million paid out of a $1.5 billion budget.
Last fiscal year, one SEPTA police officer made almost as much as the mayor of Philadelphia.
But what's maybe more important isn't just that top line number, but what they're spending the overtime on.
I'm Annette John Hall. This is The Why. Ryan Briggs with WHYY's Plan Philly and Michaela Wimberg with WHYY's Billy Penn uncovered how much money SEPTA spent on overtime over the past fiscal year and found a pattern experts described as troubling.
Well, the vast majority of SEPTA's overtime payments goes to two divisions. That's maintenance and construction. So you can think about people fixing things at stations or repairing Market Frankfurt Line cars, buses, things like that. That's where the majority of it's being spent. There's also a big chunk of it that's going to SEPTA's police force. A lot of overtime is generated there. In total, there are 9,000 people working at SEPTA, but only 10% of those 9,000 employees actually get overtime. And most of the people in that 10% are like middle managers.
How much overtime are they getting?
A bit less than 400 employees earned more than 50% of their base salaries in overtime. And there are a few dozen who earned more than their annual salary each year in overtime.
Wait a minute. They earn more than their annual salary?
Yeah. So, for example, SEPTA Police Lieutenant Michael Wright earned more overtime than anyone else on SEPTA's staff. He earned about $116,000, and that's more overtime than his entire annual salary. And so that means at the end of the fiscal year, he had earned about $212,000. This was a SEPTA police officer who was making more than the chief of SEPTA Police, Thomas Nestel. And that's earning just a little bit less than the mayor, Jim Kenney.
Wow. Was there actually that much work to do that would warrant that kind of overtime?
Ryan and I, we talked to the SEPTA spokesperson, his name is Andrew Bush, about this. And he had a few reasons that overtime like this needed to be paid out. He said, in general, SEPTA's police force has a hard time recruiting officers like they used to. The benefits working for SEPTA's police force, including salary, are generally lower than like neighboring suburban police forces. So he said that necessitated officers working more hours than they normally would. And then on the construction and maintenance side, it could be something like responding to signal issues or tracks that need to be fixed. There were three mid-level maintenance managers who made enough overtime to boost their salaries to $165,000 a year, which is more than most directors made. Bush defended that practice. He was saying that all three managers who made in that ballpark had really critical roles. And the thing about SEPTA is that they have these seniority rules, meaning that the employees who have been there longest are the first ones to be offered overtime. They get first dibs. So it's easy for mid-level managers who'd been there for a long time to rack up so many hours.
In general, SEPTA's defense is that, you know, this is a large public transportation agency, and so they need to have police or maintenance workers on call, you know, essentially around the clock. You know, they say some stuff is just unpredictable. They have a sudden weather events or storms that, you know, knock out a bus route or a train line, and people have to respond to that, even the managers.
But Ryan, do managers do that kind of maintenance work, responding to emergencies? Don't they just supervise?
Well, SEPTA does have positions that are known as frontline managers, and these are essentially non-union managers who do have to be on call to respond and supervise, you know, maintenance crews that are reacting to an emergency. And so that's SEPTA's main justification for, you know, what's going on here. But when you talk to the union, sometimes you'll hear from people who say something else is going on. And I spoke with Joe Caccio, who's the treasurer of Transport Workers Union Local 234, which represents a lot of the blue collar workers. And he says the overtime picture is a lot different for union rank and file laborers. They sometimes have trouble getting overtime approved. But when it comes to, you know, this group of non-union managers, the tables are turned, so to speak. And, you know, it seems like they have kind of an endless well of overtime to draw from.
So who's authorizing the managers overtime?
Well, according to SEPTA, you know, there is oversight here. They do say there's an approval process, and they do say there's oversight of these hours that are logged. But, you know, I've talked to former SEPTA employees who say that the system is far more informal than that and is not tightly policed. One SEPTA electrician that I spoke to who had left the agency a few years ago said that as a union rank-and-file worker, he would sometimes be called in by managers so that they had a pretext to say, I had to supervise someone. And then he would show up to work and the manager would go out to lunch or breakfast or, you know, whatever they were doing. And so critics would say that, you know, what this does is, you know, kind of warps some of the work culture. Some critics would say, you know, this provides an incentive for managers to drag out maintenance projects so that they can run up more overtime and more hourly claims. Other people in SEPTA essentially acknowledged this, said, you know, that mid-level managers will sometimes intentionally turn down promotions because it might mean moving into a position where they couldn't rack up as much overtime.
Is this normal?
No, I don't think experts would call this a normal system. I spoke to a few municipal finance experts, and they were saying generally if someone is making more than like 20% of their salary in overtime, that probably indicates some kind of systemic problem. I talked to Robert Strauss about this. He's an economics professor at Carnegie Mellon, and he said he was literally dumbfounded over the amount of overtime that SEPTA was spending.
I find the amount of hours to be difficult to believe.
Alluding to the fact that, you know, he probably thought they were claiming that fraudulently.
What are they doing? Showing up is one thing, actually producing is another.
I'm wondering how this affects riders with SEPTA spending millions on what many people are saying is unnecessary overtime. Is it hitting the rider's pocket or is it taking away from their experience?
Well, I mean, when we talk about rider experience, what a lot of these employees who are clocking a ton of overtime, what they're working on is, like we said, construction and maintenance. For example, there was an employee who he had clocked enough overtime to be working 12-hour days, 6 days a week, the entire fiscal year. And he was an electronic specialist on Market Frankford line cars. So he was, you know, fixing the electric systems in subway cars that people are riding every single day. And he's working at this insane workload, 12-hour days, 6 days a week, 75-hour work weeks, roughly. So it begs the question, are riders safe if they're riding these MFL cars every single day that are being worked on by people who are clearly either overworked or are just logging hours that they couldn't possibly be working?
When we come back,
I think there are workers at SEPTA wonder, you know, am I getting screwed over so that a manager can get rich off of, you know, this system?
This is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall. SEPTA is spending a lot of money on overtime, but they're also struggling financially. One way we've seen this play out during the pandemic is with death benefits. 7 SEPTA employees have died of COVID-19, but the agency has denied paying additional death benefits to their families. Michaela, you talked to a family going through this. Tell me what happened.
Yeah, I talked to Brenda Smith Nixon. She's the widow of Ted Nixon. Ted was 63 years old. He worked for SEPTA for 30 years as a mechanic. He was fixing up SEPTA vehicles at the Elmwood Trolley Depot. He unfortunately died of COVID in March. So he was actually the first SEPTA employee to die of COVID. And it was really hard for Brenda. I mean, she talked about how Ted was the backbone of their family.
He'll do anything for you. He was a fixer. He loved to fix anything. He liked to build different things.
He loved to collect comic books and Star Trek memorabilia. He loved to call into like talk radio shows.
He would actually get on the radio and get into the discussions. He loved that daily.
So what kind of compensation did Brenda get from SEPTA when Ted died?
The standard benefits that any family of an employee would get when the employee dies as a result of their work, not necessarily coronavirus. So the families of SEPTA employees who died from coronavirus were eligible to, of course, get the life insurance policy that the employee had paid into. They were eligible for half of their pension as soon as the spouse of the employee reached retirement age, which is 65. And they could also earn this accidental death insurance payout, which was negotiated by the union, and that was a $40,000 payout. But the union, and frankly Brenda, both thought that she deserved more because this coronavirus situation was so specific that they thought they deserved a different set of benefits for that.
I thought maybe they were going to give workman's comp, but I do think they owe us something.
What did they think they deserved?
So the union claimed that SEPTA was in fact partially responsible for Ted's death, since he likely contracted the virus at work, and SEPTA at the beginning of the pandemic, like most agencies, was scrambling to get enough PPE for all its workers, enough hand sanitizer. So, you know, to fill in the gaps, the Transit Workers Union, Local 234, that's the chapter of the union that includes most drivers, other blue-collar workers. They spent like $8,000 on hand sanitizer in April, another $11,000 on masks in May. And they argued that that's evidence that SEPTA didn't provide enough to protect its workers and should pay more to the families who lost loved ones. So the union specifically asked for a $500,000 death benefit for Brenda and all of the families who lost a SEPTA employee. That's a payout that New York's MTA provided over the summer to all the families of employees who had died working for that transit agency.
So why did SEPTA deny the request?
They were saying that they couldn't really afford to pay a death benefit to each of the families who lost someone. There were 7 SEPTA employees who died in total. And, you know, to be fair, to SEPTA's point, they did sustain a huge revenue drop in the pandemic. At first, in March, they lost like 90% of their ridership. And even through the summer, they sustained this like 70% decrease in ridership. So they've lost a ton of money in the last few months. Meanwhile, Pennsylvania's legislature has been threatening to yank funding that it usually provides to SEPTA. So the agency has been experiencing a ton of financial issues, and it just hasn't really gotten better since March.
So Michaela, how's Brenda managing now?
Brenda's doing okay. You know, she's a retired teacher. She has her own pension. She's a homeowner in New Jersey. She's not in, you know, financial freefall, losing Ted's income. She said she was never really expecting a $500,000 payout anyway.
For me, I live in the reality that I don't think that it's not too many people are actually going to give you that amount of money.
But she said what she really needed to sustain is Ted's health benefits.
They took the insurance away, the hospitalization, medical, all that away abruptly.
So that's been the loss that was hardest for her. So even though she has access to Medicare, she needs some kind of supplemental insurance because they have a daughter who has special needs. And, you know, it's just a hard loss emotionally for her.
He was a good father, and I don't want to get... Okay,
yeah, I understand.
That's enough.
She still tears up when she talks about her husband.
I want to ask both of you, I know you can't draw a one-to-one parallel with these two stories that we just heard from you guys, but SEPTA has had a history of mismanagement that hasn't helped it financially, and now it's facing one of the greatest challenges during this pandemic. So I just need to ask, do you think that if SEPTA didn't have this overtime issue, that it would be in better financial shape to help these families?
Well, you're right to say that it's not a one-to-one line, for sure. You can't say that because SEPTA paid out this overtime, they couldn't pay out these financial death benefits. That being said, I think you make a good point about the management of SEPTA in general. I mean, last year, SEPTA faced a federal investigation into alleged fraudulent spending, you know, involving roughly a dozen managers who were working with an outside vendor to embezzle money, you know, using SEPTA's credit cards. And now we're seeing this sketchy system where they're paying out excessive amounts to a handful of employees. And, you know, it draws into question the management financially of this entire agency. And if the financial management is questionable, you know, who knows what they could pay out for people if they did a better job.
I think that when you look at these stories, you look at SEPTA saying, we just don't have the money to pay out death benefits. You look where SEPTA is headed because of COVID-19 into an area where they're saying we might have to make, you know, critical service cuts and, you know, and that potentially layoffs. And I think there are workers at SEPTA wonder, you know, am I getting screwed over so that a manager can get rich off of, you know, this system that doesn't really work in the favor of the average employee? And I think that's a legitimate question for a lot of people to ask, especially looking at some of the stuff and overtime spending that, you know, on its face just seems kind of absurd.
Ryan and Michaela, thank you so much for your reporting and talking to us about it.
Yeah, thanks, Annette.
Thanks for having us on.
That was Ryan Briggs with WHYY's Plan Philly and Michaela Wimberg with WHYY's Billy Penn. The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Alex Dern, Kelsey Hansen, Sabrina Boyd-Circa, Buffy Gorilla, and Malcolm Burnley, under the editorial direction of Katie Colinari. We had editing help on this episode from Ariella Cohen. Hit me up on Twitter at AnnetteJH. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk Thursday.